The federal government seized two financial institutions over the weekend as Silicon Valley Bank and New York Signature Bank both collapsed. The FDIC says it will insure all deposits in the banks, even above the normal $250,000 limit on insured deposits. On Monday, President Biden tried to reassure the public that the cost of this action will not be directly passed on to them.
No losses will be borne by the taxpayers. Instead, the money will come from the fees that banks pay into the deposit insurance fund. Because of the actions that our regulators have already taken, every American should feel confident that their deposits will be there if and when they need them.
The Biden administration has avoided calling it a bailout for these banks, but some financial analysts wonder if the White House is setting a new precedent by insuring deposits above the $250,000 mark set by the FDIC. We're learning more about what led to these bank collapses and what Biden's response means for fiscal policy moving forward, and we welcome you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the government seizing these collapsed banks? Do you agree with the Biden administration's decision to insure bank deposits above the $250,000 limit? And are you concerned with the precedent that this might set? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, or email us, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is James M. Murray, professor of economics at UW-La Crosse. He teaches about macroeconomics, money, and banking. James, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Let's start with what happened. What happened last week to Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank? Why did they collapse?
Well, there were bank runs on both of those institutions, and no bank, healthy or not, can survive a bank run. Banks take our deposits. They keep a small fraction of them on reserve, ready for us when we need them. And depositors can ask for their funds without notice as much as we want, whenever we want. But banks don't hold all of our money in reserves. They loan out a large fraction of that. And then the other thing that they do with our funds is they invest it in pretty liquid assets like treasury bills. Liquid means you can convert it quickly to cash to meet your depositors' needs if you want to. But treasury bonds, it's when the U.S. government goes into debt. They sell these promises to make those future cash flows. Those are assets held by the bank, and they can earn some interest if the bank doesn't need to sell those off. But there were runs on these financial institutions, and there were really three reasons. Now, FDIC ensures that your deposits are covered, even if a bank should fail. If all of the deposits were covered, then there shouldn't have been a bank run. But these two banks were unique in that only about 10% of their total deposits, at least that's for Signature, Silicon Valley Bank was similar. A very small fraction of those total deposits were actually insured because they have so many commercial clients, businesses, medium-sized businesses that need to make payrolls every 2 weeks, every month, whatever that might be, that were keeping balances much, much higher than that $250,000. And then the other thing that happened is the assets that were being held by these banks, now the commercial loans, the mortgages, those loans that the banks make, those aren't liquid at all. The liquid assets, so those treasury bills, those have been declining in value if you're going to sell them on a secondary market. Now, if you hold them to maturity, if you have a five-year bond and the bank wants to hold it for 5 years and collect those cash flows from the United States Treasury, there is no risk whatsoever. But if you need to sell those bonds in order to meet your depositors' needs, what's happened lately with interest rates increasing as the Fed has been trying to fight inflation, bond prices fall. And so the value of those bonds have fallen. And so it's become more difficult for these banks to meet their depositors' needs.
Well, James, let me stop you there, because I'm curious about that federal interest rate is one of the reasons I saw people saying this was the start of the bank run, is that these banks were kind of tied up in U.S. Treasury bonds, weren't liquid, and interest rates
liquid,
but interest rates were making these banks investments challenged. So what role did the Federal Reserve's interest rate hikes play in these banks? And if it played a role in these banks going under, how come it has not infected other banks as of yet?
No, good question. So this says it's also been quite predictable that the reason the Fed is raising interest rates is to try to increase the cost of borrowing, kind of bring down spending in order to try to reduce demand and bring down inflation, because inflation has been a problem. Whenever we see high inflation, we should see the Fed responding by increases in interest rates. And the Fed's been clear about their intentions on raising interest rates. Next week on Wednesday, I bet you you'll see a statement by the Fed that they're increasing interest rates by another quarter of a percentage point. This is affecting absolutely every bank in the country. And this is not the first time that the Fed has raised interest rates either. So this is quite predictable and widespread. So that can't be the only story. The last part of the story was that Signature Valley Bank, for example, was very specialized. Most of their depositors and their loans, or a very large fraction of their depositors and loans, were venture capital funded small to medium sized startup companies in the tech industry and in the health tech industry. And the tech industry in general has seen, has been struggling lately. Uh-huh. I think Facebook just announced another round of layoffs just yesterday. Google's announced layoffs, Microsoft's announced layoffs. And I'm sure those smaller companies in the tech industry are hurting too. And so what that means is for when these smaller tech companies are also hurting, they're probably drawing down their deposits. And so these two financial institutions are actually seeing higher demands on their deposits than probably most banks around the country. So we have that problem. We have the problem that most of their deposits are not actually FDIC insured. Mm-hmm. And we have the problem that the most liquid assets that the banks could have to sell to meet their depositors' needs are also losing value.
James Murray, our guest, professor of economics at UW-La Crosse. We invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. What did you think about the second and third largest bank failures in U.S. history over the weekend? What did you think about the Biden administration's intent to step in and help them above the $250,000 limit that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation had generally stuck to? And 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join us. But I'll ask you, James, what precedent this sets when the federal government's willing to go above and beyond the FDIC in covering depositors of these two banks that went under? They still don't want to call it a bailout, but is it?
So bailout's not a very precisely defined term. So we could easily have an argue about that depending on our definition. I would say in many respects, it's not a bailout. And that is Signature Bank and Silicon Valley Bank. They failed. The owners, the shareholders of those firms, they lost their money. They lost a lot of their money. And the employees are going to be losing their jobs. Management has already lost their jobs. So they'd made mistakes and they're paying for it. So they were for sure not bailed out. So who was quote unquote bailed out? Who was bailed out were the clients of the bank, the customers of the bank. Those it could be depositors like you and me, but also they especially serviced a lot of venture funded small to medium sized businesses. So it was those businesses in the tech industry and the health industry that were using Signature Valley Bank, not as an investment tool, but really as just a service for providing transaction services, depositing their revenues and then cutting paychecks for payrolls. And so it was those institutions whose deposits are guaranteed. So they're seeing relief. They can meet payrolls this week. Yeah. Because Sunday night, Monday morning, that was a significant question about whether these small businesses would be able to meet their payroll obligations for this week.
And for many, the 15th would be payday. And let's go to your questions now and comments about these banks going under and what's next for our fiscal policy going forward at 1-800-642-1234 with our guest, James Murray, professor of economics at UW La Crosse. Greg and Rhinelander, you're on the air.
Yeah, is that Rick and Rhinelander?
I'm sorry, did you say, I've got Greg here, but you can be whoever you want to be.
Okay, I'll be Rick. So I have two questions for your guests, and thank you for taking my call. The first is, during the Trump administration, part of Dodd-Frank was rolled back significantly, the capital requirements for banks, that is the fraction of reserve that they keep, to prevent having to have this kind of problem. And more importantly, the stress tests that where they would evaluate, well, what would happen if interest rates went up? Or what would happen if we're in a concentrated, non-diversified situation like these banks are, where all their clients are in one sector of the economy? I'm interested in that. And I'm also interested in the question of moral hazard. Whereas if we now bail out any depositor above $250,000, what is to prevent the banks from taking extreme risks? There's no, as long as the government's going to backstop everything, there's no reason to even consider risk management. So I'm interested in those two areas.
Great questions, Rick. Appreciate the call. And let's start with the rollback of regulations in 2018. Did that play a role here as you see it, James?
That wasn't the major role here, because these banks, as of as of a few months ago, they had positive net worths. These banks were holding treasury bills, bonds, fairly liquid assets to meet their to be able to meet their depositors' needs. So they were. I didn't look into the full financial details of these banks, but the problem wasn't that there were inadequate capital requirements. The problem was is the declining values. I'm not saying there wasn't mismanagement. Right? There was mismanagement. This was quite predictable that interest rates would be rising, and therefore the value of those bonds that the banks are holding as part of their assets to meet the depositors' needs, those are declining in value. That was quite predictable. That risk was inadequately addressed. But I don't see it as a problem with the rollbacks of the requirements.
And what about the moral hazards of and going forward, James?
So a moral hazard problem in general is when you whenever you take any kind of risky action, if you take some risky action, if there's a big payout, you get your big payout. If there's a big loss, somebody bails you out and somebody else's problem. And then that just if that's going to be the case every time, or there's an expectation that'll be the case the next time, then you're going to have this problem of banks taking on too much risk. So I do not think there's a moral hazard with the financial institutions. And the reason I don't is because the banks themselves were not bailed out. Signature Valley Bank was seized by the federal government. All its assets are going to be sold. The equity holders are going to be out all of their money. So a lot of people are going to lose their money. These are the owners of the banks. So they for sure are realizing the consequences of their actions. The ones who are quote unquote bailed out, or the ones that are assisted here, are the customers. So where there might be a moral hazard problem, though, is if you're, say, a wealthy individual and, I don't have this problem. If you're a wealthy individual that has balances and checking accounts of several million dollars, you know, something that exceeds $250,000, you might fail to, diversify your portfolio of just where you put your deposit accounts. Maybe make sure that you have a larger fraction of your financial wealth insured that way. So there's the potential there. But as far as moral hazard with financial institutions, I don't see it, because these banks failed.
We're talking about bank collapses and federal fiscal policy with UW La Crosse economics professor James Murray. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Did the two bank collapses cause concern for you and your money? And what do you see going forward after the Biden administration eased concerns earlier this week for depositors of those two banks? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. Our conversation continues here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our talk with James Murray. He's an economics professor at UW La Crosse, here today to look at the collapses of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank and the response so far from the federal government. And you can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email us ideas@wpr.org. Let's go back to your questions now. We'll go to Gail in Fish Creek. Gail, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've been watching this on several fronts. My question is kind of, there's one question and a comment, that I was looking at whether they were, how much they were into, invested into crypto and where that all is, and with the meltdown that FTX took, if they were connected in that. And that may have caused big money investors to be pulling out, which all it would take is a couple of the big ones, the Whopper Whale investors, to pull out, and that would leave the whole bank vulnerable. But then Signature Bank had Barney Frank on the board. And if anybody remembers him from the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the mortgage meltdown issue that happened with the Glass-Steagall and all, his fingers were all over that. So I'm wondering why anybody would hire him, and he was connected with Signature. So what's going on with the crypto with those two banks?
Yeah, thank you, Gail. And what is the role that crypto plays in the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, James?
Signature Bank they specialized in transaction services to crypto startups. So they weren't providing services and for the cryptocurrency itself. They were providing financial services for companies that were involved in cryptocurrency. 27% of the assets at Signature Bank, 27% of the clients were digital asset or crypto clients. So, like the tech industry, the crypto, maybe not for the same reasons, but what those two industries have in common is the crypto industry has lately been suffering, and that was a big reason also behind the collapse of Signature Bank, that its clients, its loans were, some of its loans may have been in default or higher levels of default because they were crypto companies, and then those commercial clients that had deposit accounts, they likely had to draw down their deposit some. And then for the same reason as Silicon Valley Bank, let's see, Signature Bank had only 10% of its deposits FDIC insured. And so most of its deposits weren't insured. The value of its liquid assets had fallen with higher interest rates. And just like Silicon Valley Bank, they found they were not able to meet their depositors' needs.
And what about Barney Frank?
Played a role.
Yeah, James, Barney Frank, I mean, the Dodd-Frank legislation following the 2008 subprime mortgage crisis and financial crisis. I mean, it's named, he's got his name right on it, but Gail mentions Barney Frank as one of the people involved in Signature Bank. And from Politico the other day, Barney Frank says he blames the crypto panic for his bank's collapse.
Okay.
you don't see it that way.
If you're if you're a Signature Bank, that doesn't, you know, you don't have a very diverse portfolio of customers and heavy in crypto. I don't care if you're heavy in crypto and or heavy in bananas. If there's going to if the banana industry or the crypto industry or the tech industry or whatever you might have too many eggs in that basket collapses, then you're bank's going to be in a difficult situation. So,
yeah. One of the other reasons that I have seen blamed for these banks going under, and specifically from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, is wokeism. The ESG initiatives, environment, social, and government initiatives of these banks. Do you see that playing a role?
No, the problem here seems to be pretty specific about a non-diverse customer base that has started to draw down their deposits. So very specific industries here, the tech industry and the crypto industry. I don't know how wokeism comes into play there, but it's the combination of two industries that are suffering right now, that these banks happen to be specializing in, at the same time as interest rates going up and the value of those bonds that the banks are holding going down, at the same time as having, and this is about being non-diverse, also non-diverse customers also. I mean diverse in terms of the types of industries and the wealth of the customers. Having a very small percentage of your deposits actually FDIC insured. That's why we had runs on the banks. If we had a high fraction of those deposits FDIC insured, even if people thought the banks were going to collapse, there wouldn't be a worry. There wouldn't be a bank run on them because you would still feel secure in your deposits.
And I want to ask, James, if this is potentially contagious. I see this morning that the Credit Suisse Bank shares fell more than 25% in today's trading, at least at last check. Is there a threat of contagion here among banks? And we got about a minute left.
Okay. Bank stocks around both sides of the Atlantic seem to have been falling. I won't put too much interpretation on what's happening with stock prices that could rebound tomorrow. Whatever's going on the other side of the Atlantic doesn't seem to be the same issue. What's in common though are very large depositors, very wealthy depositors over there. There's a potential for contagion if people just start not trusting their bank. Like I said, even healthy banks, not a single bank around the world can survive a bank run without being bailed out or insured or something like that.
James,
so it is about confidence.
We'll have to leave it there for today, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. James Murray, professor of economics at UW-La Crosse, with us today to discuss the FDIC seizing Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank after they collapsed and how this shapes fiscal policy.